once again, and welcome to the Music Review Database Podcast with me, Chris. First off, I want to say I'm sorry that it took so long for me to make another podcast, because the past few months have been insanely busy for me, and I just couldn't really find the time to sit down and edit the latest interview that I've done and just make it into a podcast so you guys could listen to it. So I'm really sorry for that. And I promise you that it won't happen in the future, or at least I'm going to try to not let it happen again in the future. That being said, what you're about to hear is an interview that I did on the 20th of November with Canadian ambient producer Lawsill. And I wanted to talk to him because first things first, he's a huge inspiration to me personally. And second of all, his newest album, Sketches from New Brighton, came out, and I wanted to know a bit more about him and his music and the newest album. So, without further ado, I hope you have as much fun listening to this as I had making it, and I'll see you, as always, on the other side. To start off with a familiar question, and that is, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners and readers who don't know you?
Okay, my name is Scott Morgan, and I perform under the name Lawsill.
And let's go back to the humble beginnings. Did you grow up in a musical family?
Not really. I kind of came into music on my own, partly through school. And then partly just I started playing in bands as a young teenager, and didn't come from a musical family at all. Like, most of my family, you know, it's not that they weren't encouraging, but they weren't educated in music, and it was kind of not their thing. So I just stumbled into it, and he did it with friends, and sort of once I started doing it, I got the bug, and I never stopped doing it.
And what made you decide that you wanted to make this music specifically?
Well, I think it was the culmination of, you know, I went to music school in my early 20s and sort of was exposed to a lot of experimental music techniques and a lot of computer music and electronic music, more from an academic side, but then was also, you know, doing independent kind of, you know, rock music stuff on the side, and it was kind of those two things slammed together, which kind of became, you know, this, I don't know, something that I've always kind of felt comfortable in, this world of kind of a little bit of experimental and a little bit of, you know, academic, but mostly kind of rooted in pop culture. So some sort of happy medium in there is where I landed.
And how would you describe your music to somebody who has never heard your music before?
It's very slow moving and generally very quiet. It's really about texture. I tend to, you know, compose a lot with layers and textures and colors and, you know, try to kind of emphasize that aspect of the music more than perhaps melody and harmony and things like that, although those things kind of find themselves in there once in a while. Being a drummer and having a history with percussion and stuff, I'm interested in rhythm, but in a really subtle sense. I mean, that's about as descriptive as I could get, I suppose.
Your new album, Sketches from New Brighton, has just come out. And I just wanted to know, how did you approach the making of that album, and did you work with any specific themes?
Yes. I mean, I was really inspired by this place in Vancouver, which is a park called New Brighton Park. And it's a strange little place. I mean, it's not really, you know, we have some really nice parks here in Vancouver, like Stanley Park and stuff, but New Brighton is kind of not very showy. It's kind of a simple little place, but it also borders, you know, industry, and there's a lot of kind of, like, there's a grain elevator there and the trains come through there, and It's a port, so there's, you know, container ships coming and going, and there's a bridge right there, and it's just like a really interesting place to me because it's this hub of activity, but it's meant to be this natural, you know, kind of park setting, and you're surrounded by, I mean, Vancouver, you know, we're surrounded by mountains and water, and it's very much, you know, we're surrounded by nature, but it's a port city, and there's a lot of industry and a lot of activity. So I was just really put, you know, I was inspired by this kind of combination of industry and nature kind of butting up against one another. And even just sonically, the space is really interesting. There's like, you know, the sound from the trains, the sound from the water, the sound from the bridge and the grain elevator. It just makes this really interesting soundscape. So I was actually quite inspired and did a lot of field recordings of the space and was quite inspired by the sound of the space. And so that was kind of the launching pad for Sketches from New Brighton was these sort of impressions from this physical place.
And what was the initial fan and press reaction to Sketches from New Brighton?
I don't know. Most people seem to like it, but I think it's interesting at this stage in my career because I've been doing, you know, the Lossal Project has been going for probably 12 or 13 years now, and even if I think I'm doing something different, some people see it as like kind of similar to work I've done in the past, and so I get a little bit of mixed reaction. Some people are just like, oh, it's another great Lossal record, and other people are like, oh, it's just another Lossal record. So I mean, you're kind of stuck. The impression I've been getting is that some people are kind of bored with some of the work that I've been doing because it's seen as kind of the same thing. But then the people who really like it really like it. So I don't know. I don't know what I don't. In general, like, I don't read reviews anymore, so I don't know what the critics are kind of saying in general.
So you just don't really think about what other people think of your music, and just, you know, focus on making music, and that's really it. The thing that I know from a lot of critics, and I'm basically shooting myself in the foot here because I'm a critic myself, basically, is that we are notorious for missing the point. So I think that it's a good thing that you don't really pay attention to that anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's purely a personal reason why I don't read reviews anymore. I mean, I basically have found that, you know, I'm either kind of falsely boosted, you know, my ego is either falsely boosted by someone really liking the record, or I just get really disappointed and depressed by people's, like, you know, criticism. So I don't find there's anything fruitful for me in that sort of... I really enjoy talking to people, and I enjoy hearing personal feedback, like, and even if it's critical. But for some reason, that forum of, like, the written kind of critique, I find it really hard to read, so I just decided to stop reading them. But.
All right, fair enough. I want to talk about influences now. Who are you influenced by?
Well, there's a real mixed bag, I think. You know, there's the really obvious stuff, like Brian Eno and, you know, Wolfgang Voigt and stuff like that. But really, I think if you go back to some of the more kind of core influences, I mean, I was really... taken, you know, when I was in music school with a lot of kind of 20th century, you know, composers like Ligeti and then right up to like the minimalists, you know, like Steve Reich, and I'm a big Gavin Bryars fan. You know, so like, but then, you know, in terms of like, you know, more modern kind of computer or electronic musicians, I mean, Marcus Popp, you know, Oval was always a big influence on me, and like Pole, and you know, those are sort of my contemporaries who I find really influential. But yeah, there's a real mixed bag. I mean, I like to listen to all kinds of stuff, and you know, you never know what's going to creep in there. I'm a big dub fan, And you know, so it's sort of Arvo Pärt meets like Lee Scratch Perry or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that is pretty broad.
Yeah, like I don't know. There's a lot of different things I think, you know, in the mix, but some are more obvious than others, and I don't like to stick just to the obvious ones because I really, you know, I think it's important to be a listener and to be open-minded and kind of explore things. So I let things. I mean, I'm a big film music buff, like soundtrack buff. So I mean, that stuff kind of finds its way in there too. So it's pretty wide spectrum.
And are you influenced by things outside of music?
Well, I mean, other art forms. I mean, I'm definitely, you know, I'm influenced by film, and I'm interested in visual arts. And then I think, you know, I'm very interested in places. Like I've always been really inspired by geographic locations. Like just you know, like Sketches from New Brighton is really all about that. And you know, I've explored things like that in other records too, like where just being in a place and kind of absorbing it. Like there's something really interesting about the world out there, and I mean, whether it's natural stuff or even, you know, sort of human created stuff, I enjoy absorbing physical spaces.
And when you look back at your own catalog, which track and which album are you the most proud of?
Oh boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I always get that one.
I mean, album might be easier. I think perhaps. I mean, this might change on a day-to-day basis because it depends how I feel. But I think Plume is probably my personal favorite of my releases. I don't know if there's one track on there in particular that I could cite as, you know, it's interesting because there's certain albums like Plume is an example where I don't even really think of the tracks as that independent, even though they are and they're created that way. That really the album is an album to me, and I don't like ungluing it, if that makes any sense.
And I know you perform live, but could you describe it to somebody who's never been to a Losel show?
My live shows, well, it's varied actually. Like if I'm playing solo, it's really just me manipulating stuff on a laptop, and you know, I have done all kinds of collaborative events as well. Like most recently in Seattle, for both Decibel Festival and Substrata Festival in the summer, I was collaborating with a Seattle-based pianist named Kelly Wise, and Kelly and I did a couple of collaborations together, and we've done some recording together now too. And so live, it's like he's playing piano and I'm kind of mixing stuff and taking the piano and treating it while he's playing. So I've done that with certain players. I've played with string players and a vibraphone player, and whenever I get the opportunity, I like to include, you know, live performers and kind of do something with that. But most of the time, I play solo, and that's basically just mixing electronic stuff.
And when you look back at your career, what's something that you know now that you wish you knew back when you started out? Take your time.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Well, it's funny because I think I always kind of knew this, or I basically assumed this, but you know, it'd be good to be told, I think, sometimes as someone who's starting out, that like you really can't set your sights too high in terms of, you know, making money. You know, you're basically never going to really make money. So you have to do it because you really love to do it and you really want to do it first. And I mean, I kind of always knew that, but I feel like being told that, is really important, because then you're doing it for the right reasons. And I mean, not that musicians shouldn't get paid. It's just that, you know, I think having that expectation is kind of false when you're starting to make really esoteric music like I'm making. And maybe that's one thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. As a musician myself, I know that it's very gratifying on a personal level, but there's next to no monetary gain there, so you just really have to do it because you're passionate about it, not because you want to get rich.
You know, it's funny because I went to university with the hopes. I always, you know, as a young person was playing in rock bands and stuff, and kind of, you know, I had the dreams of being a rock star kind of idea when I was a kid, but I kind of knew in the back of my head that it's like, okay, well, I got to have a backup plan if this doesn't work. So, you know, I think, you know, some people maybe it's good to not be aware that, and maybe you'll just go for it then if you're not aware of the limitations. But I don't know. I'd prefer to just get it out of the way and just be honest.
And now I'm curious. Do you make enough money to pay the bills, or do you earn enough with your music to pay the bills, more specifically?
Oh, well, there's a kind of blurry line there, because traditionally for the last 10 years or so I was working in video games and was doing sound and music for games, and you know, in June our studio closed, so I've been kind of forced to be a little more focused on music stuff of late, and trying to put together. It's always got to be a combination for me of doing some kind of other work. But it's built up to the point that I can almost pay the bills, almost. So I'm still kind of working at it.
And I'm wondering, what are your go-to plugins and hardware when you're creating your music?
Historically I'm a Max MSP user. That's kind of my main tool. I enjoy making my own little synths and samplers and you know, audio processing kind of plugins and stuff. I used to actually compose and perform live with a rather complicated Max patch that I had built over the years, and then as soon as Max for Live came out for Ableton, I kind of switched to that. So now these days I'm a Live user, despite having resisted using Live for years. And you know, I've kind of ported most of my main little objects into Max for Live and use that. So that's kind of the go-to thing. There's other little bits and bobs. Like, I've always loved SoundHack. I don't know if you know that application, but
no.
It's a little sort of sound processor that was created years and years ago by a guy named Tom Erb, and he's still going, and he does mostly VST plugins now, but there's a standalone version of SoundHack that is still around, and it's pretty great for convolution and spectral morphing and stuff like that. What else? For recording, I've used Nuendo a lot. That's mostly because when I was working on games and we were doing production stuff, I was using Nuendo, so I was just really comfortable with it. So I've often turned to that for live recording. Like, if I'm going to add any instrumental stuff to my music, that's what I tend to use.
And then moving away from the production side of music, what is your stance on illegally downloading and spreading of music, and your music specifically?
I don't know if I have a stance per se. I mean, I definitely have a lot of emotional reaction on either side. You know, it's really hard, I think, as an artist to not be affected a little bit by the idea of someone kind of downloading your music illegally and not, you know, paying for it. But at the same time, like, I can't help, as a small artist, I can't help but think, like, this is a really powerful way of getting your music out there. And like, if someone's downloading it and enjoying it, maybe that leads to them eventually buying it or coming to your show. And So I don't know. I'm torn on that stuff, and I go back and forth, and I'm not honestly sure if I have a stance in the sense that I'm on a soapbox and kind of preaching one way or the other. I think we have opportunities as artists these days that we never had. You know, you go back 30, 40 years, and it's just ridiculous to think how easy it is to reach people. But at the same time, it's like, you know, as someone who's on the cusp of trying to support myself and my family as an artist, it's like, well, I'd really like to do this for a living, and I've been working at it really hard for, you know, a really long time, and I'm still like really struggling despite being somewhat successful. So I don't know, I go back and forth, I think, and it depends what day you ask me, I suppose.
And what lies in the future for Lost Hill? Is there anything exciting that you want to share?
Yeah, there's. I mean, I've got a fair number of things going on at the moment. I mentioned the piano player in Seattle that I've been working with. Well, we did some recording, and I don't know if you know Raphael Irisarry. You know, also known as The Site Below in Seattle, but he's mastering that right now for me, and I'm going to self-release that on vinyl in probably in the next few months. So I'm really excited about that. It's basically mostly versions of other pieces that are done with the piano, but then there's a couple of things that one is a recording called City Hospital that's pretty hard to get. There were only 100 of those made, and so it's kind of a re-release of that. So there's that. That's pretty exciting. I'm planning a tour of the UK and Europe in March, which I'm pretty excited about. I haven't been to Europe for quite a few years, and so this is, you know, while I've got the time, I'm trying to like pack that in. And I'm working on a collaboration with Brock Van Way, you know, BV Dub. For Glacial Movements, both of us have released solo records with Glacial Movements, and Alessandro, who runs that label, kind of suggested we do a collaborative thing. So we're just at the very early stages of figuring out what that's going to mean. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, that was basically everything that I wanted to ask you, and I sincerely want to thank you for doing this interview with us, and hopefully we'll speak to you again in the future. Have a good evening or morning or afternoon, what I don't know.
All right, take care and have a good evening.